CIUT 89.5 FM, celebrating 35 years as the sound of your city. Proudly student and listener-supported community radio.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And with me is Phil Conlon of Classical Underground, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. How are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
So, well, we have news, actually, a lot of news. An individual, a scientist, who was been making, made headlines sometime back because the Canadian authorities have brought a charge accusing a Chinese national, a scientist, worked at Hydro-Quebec of providing information to China. It's a very broad, vague, the kind of thing that creates hysteria, could, fear. It's an ongoing matter. We've been pointing out on the Taylor Report for some time. Donald Trump's administration explicitly targeted Chinese scientists. And by the way, when they say Chinese, they mean Chinese Americans. They mean not only people who are Chinese nationals, but who work in the field of science. They want a new McCarthyism, and I would say they succeeded. It has now, we're seeing expressions of it in Canada. And it's not new here either, because over the past 3-4 years, there have been stories, mainly sensationalized. If you want to see it, the true sensationalism, you find it in the Globe and Mail, loves to speculate about people who work in the field of science, who are Asians. And it leads, we talk about this for many reasons, primarily or principally because there is already a historical tradition growing out of Canada being part of the British colonial system of stigmatizing Asians and creating phobia. And which leads to discrimination, but and broadly across employment, housing, wages, everything, but also to intimidation, hostility, violence. And so every time you see one of these headlines, you keep in mind that there is a political agenda, which is dangerous to all Canadians, though it targets only one portion of the community. It's a desire to divide the community, try to actually divide the community against itself. And it's something to be alert to. So we have the story of the gentleman in Montreal. He, by the way, received bail today. That's one headline. He received bail. The judge delivered quite a long account of why because the argument was whether he should be held or not. Judge spoke at considerable length about this, and it is good news that because given the headlines. Frankly, when you use the word espionage or suggest spying, that kind of thing, the ordinary person becomes somewhat alarmed, and it enables people who have power to abuse that power. So it would appear that we've had at least a somewhat moderating voice coming from the bench at this point. Listeners should know that the man in question defended himself from the stand. He took the stand to talk about his case, which is not usually the way, you know, once people get lawyers, they tend to just exercise their right to remain silent and wait the matter out till it's all entirely held. He did speak at length about being proud of his work. He is a scientist of considerable talent. He's 34, 35 years old, published many important papers. He is actually an asset to the Hydro-Québec, I would say, objectively speaking, because he's probably the most skilled scientist in his field that they've ever employed. He spoke about this from the bench. We've had a phenomenon. He was removed by Hydro-Québec. What was behind that, we do not know. He had himself contested it and was he wanted due process, and it became clear from the way he spoke that, as far as he's concerned, the slate is clean, and he's prepared to answer anybody who is accusing him. He has nothing to hide, but he's, of course, he has solid credentials. And following Hydro-Québec's removal of him for reasons known to them and contested by him, the government stepped in with this accusation. I remind listeners of the Taylor Report that in the United States, under Donald Trump's direction, first of all, but followed by the Biden administration, there was a targeting. They wanted, it's sort of like they named the accused group. They said, we were very concerned about scientists from China, and we want to make sure that we ask all the institutions to cooperate with the authorities. Well, out of that will come accusations. That's going to happen and also there's going to be loss of jobs. This is actually part of a phenomenon we call xenophobia. It's part of U.S. foreign policy. It's to create the suspicion of an identifiable group. And let's say loudly and clearly that in Canada, the scientific community has not been nearly as courageous and alert to the danger as we are seeing in the United States. Major scientific communities have rallied against the stigmatization of Asian American scientists and they called on the Biden administration to change its course. And incidentally, there has been a slight adjustment in course. The language of the direction coming from, I'm guessing, the Attorney General's office for investigations, the language has changed to a less zealous policy. A number of individuals found themselves in courtrooms. By the way, lost their homes, lost their jobs, suffered tremendous anxiety, had to pay tremendous amount for lawyers. But most of those cases, frankly, have been won. But, you put an individual on his heels and you say, we think, you took your laptop home and we already got you because you took the laptop home. See, that a laptop being taken home is a mile and several thousand miles away from espionage and any demonstration. They have yet to show that any of these individuals were under the direction of a foreign power. However, the suggestion that they were, I'd say that's been settled. I mean, as far as the population knows, it's all open and shut case, because the demonization of the People's Republic of China is such that it's presumed they must be doing that because, they're bad people, so they must be doing it. I'll put in a question here, by the way, for all Canadians, because I don't know the answer to this. But does Canada spy on anybody? Do we have a budget for work inside countries other than our own to gather information? As far as I know, there's a rather large budget where that's what they're paying for. It's just that we don't have any report of that. But we speak very carelessly of, oh, someone might be here looking into our affairs. So, and what is Five Eyes? Five Eyes, to jump ahead, is an intelligence gathering group, shared intelligence work of all types, phone taps, computer taps, on the ground work, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the United States, and Great Britain. Have I got all five? I think I got them all. That's Five Eyes. They don't share with anybody except themselves. They do, occasionally they've been asked if others could join them in spying. France asked, and they were told no, because France is not a Protestant country. It's not an English-speaking country. It's not even, frankly, in the history of racial terminology, is not considered white. You can check out the Nazis on this point. There used to be Nazi ideology claimed that France was already black, and therefore, you know, it was a lost cause. But at any rate, Five Eyes is a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant alliance which gathers intelligence and probably does a few other things. It got into the news because our prime minister was told he should get rid of Huawei because he was the last of the five on that front, because billions of dollars were invested here and development was taking place, and Canada was becoming one of the countries that had advanced technology of the type that Huawei provides, and it was, of course, Canadian and Huawei, so they were told by Five Eyes to stop. And we read about it in one of the national magazines, said that Trudeau was invited to a meeting. Justin Trudeau was invited to a meeting of Five Eyes representatives who told him he had to get rid of Huawei. There was no actual basis to do it other than to just do it, which was going to cost Canada. So this is the context in which we're talking about this individual now. The United States has been pushing that Canada be more on side with a policy of, frankly, xenophobia. And it's taken now the form, here's our, could be our headline, Indo-Pacific. Phil, you heard about the Indo-Pacific. Here's the headline from the Globe and Mail. Indo-Pacific policy sees China as disruptive global power. Disruptive global power.
Phil, did you notice that Asia-Pacific has disappeared? Like it doesn't exist in the geography of the world anymore.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. That's Phil Conlon. Yes. That's absolutely right. We are now given a new term, and there's no quotes around it, you see, because now it's official. This is how you will be trained as a Canadian population to say the words Indo-Pacific when it's a neologism, and it's rooted in colonialism. You know, only the colonial states use this term, starting back with the Germans in the middle of the 19th century. They began to use the term. But it's never been state policy, as put out now by our foreign minister, Global Affairs. Global Affairs sounds a little seedy, actually, in my view. You remember Jerry Lee Lewis said he reads about foreign affairs and realizes he never had any? So Global Affairs, I'd rather say what? Well, foreign policy. So, yes, it's a new word, and the Canadian population is going to be taught the word. It's going to be Indo-Pacific. As the terminology indicates, it's a strategy to split India and China as developing countries, to drive a wedge and to try to force India into an alliance against two countries, Russia and China. To call disruptive global power, we have a disruptive global power. It's our closest neighbor, and that would be the United States. The United States is making a great noise about how they're concerned about Ukraine. And they said, unprovoked attack on Ukraine. That's the mantra. Don't worry, we haven't lost thread here with the Chinese issue. So they say disruptive. China is disruptive. Well, see, this is why there's a different point of view in the world. This is why Canada is now isolated and becoming more isolated. The developing world doesn't agree with any of this terminology. They do not intend to be party to a split of the world between the developed countries. And how did they become developed? Because they were colonizing countries. They destroyed populations, destroyed them utterly. Indigenous populations, not just in Canada, which they did. I mean, it was a genocidal policy. Even Justin Trudeau will now say that because he wants to move on to other genocidal policies, I guess. But yes, they enriched themselves by conquest and by calling these territories theirs. What's the Commonwealth? These are places where Britain was a conqueror. And I think, by the way, it's a disgrace that the Commonwealth exists. But anyhow, at least they have the appropriate leader. Mr. Kagame of Rwanda is the leader of the Commonwealth, which tells you something about the integrity of the Commonwealth. But here we have the U.S. saying, and Canada has no complaint about the U.S. They don't call the U.S. policies disruptive. They say that there's disruption in Europe on the part of Russia. However, the United States Army has a base. Now they actually have two bases in Syria, a sovereign country. Two bases. They took those bases by force. And I forget the year. It might have been, was it 2013, 2014? They went, why is the United States in Syria? The answer is self-defense. The United States put its military on the ground in Syria and called it self-defense. Against whom? Well, against term ISIS / Al-Qaeda / whatever. If you notice, they change terminology and whatnot, but it's the same alleged group of people who were told, attack the U.S. So the United States can attack a country, occupy it, take its oil. This is not disputed. You remember, I mean, the beauty of Trump was that, of course, his mouth would just go ahead and say things. He said, well, I think we should have pulled out of Iraq, but we should have kept the oil. He said, do you remember, Phil? We should have kept the oil. Well, in the case of Syria, they are keeping it. And it isn't a small amount. It's a lot. And they pump the oil and take it out. Why is the United States there? Self-defense. That is what you call disruptive global power. They have no right there at all. Syria is a member of the United Nations. Syria's territory is its territorial integrity is not challenged, even by the way, I just recently read a statement, even by Turkey. Turkey is also concerned about the situation because the area is predominantly or has a very large Kurdish population. And between Turkey and Syria and Iraq, the Kurdish issue is a very big one, a live issue. So the United States, because it was attacked on 9/11, has given itself the right to enter Syria in its oil-producing region, place its troops there, and extract oil. Then the United States turns to the developing countries and said, oh, we're not happy with Russia being in Ukraine. And the developing countries say, how about Syria? Why are you there by force? Why are you taking Syria's natural resources? And there's no answer to that because they don't have to answer. American people, certainly Canadian people, don't care. I mean, they've never been told properly anyway. They can say, well, President Assad doesn't represent our values, I guess is the main thing. So this is where we are, where hypocrisy is so thick, cut it with a butter knife. And the way of looking at the world has been totally distorted. And so we have this issue now of Canada following U.S. policy, even though it is very detrimental to the interest of Canada. It is helpful to American interests because American interests have decided that they cannot actually enter into business and trade competition with China without losing. And so they've decided to start breaking the furniture, throwing up roadblocks. It's like watching somebody in a football match, tripping his opponent. The United States has adopted a policy of tripping its opponent because they are unable to compete with them. There's a new headline today apropos of this matter, Indo-Pacific. You might say, after they went out there to Vancouver, I don't know, Phil, if you watched, was it Miss Jolie and her sidekicks? They had the Pacific Ocean as a backdrop to the Indo-Pacific policy. And, when you have a backdrop, you really need music to kind of really round it out. So the music for this one today, Monday, what is it today, Phil?
28th of November.
Okay. Hey, by the way, there's your little, that way if you're looking, doing your research, you'll say, oh, they said the 28th. All right. So the sound that you would hear would be the old comedic wazoo sound, or the somebody hitting the cymbal sideways. It's going brong, because the president of Taiwan has resigned today from her position as chair of her party. Why? Because her party got beaten, badly beaten, in elections. And who was her most recent visitor? Nancy Pelosi and Judy Scroe. And they went there. Now you're getting the picture why they were there. Because everybody's been scratching their head. Why in the world does an American congresswoman from San Francisco go to Taiwan and have her picture taken with this president of the party that was created, by the way, in 2019? So this is 2022. It took her 3 years to fall on her face. Her policy was to talk independence, 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 hostility to China, bring in U.S. weaponry, be visited by prominent Canadians. Here's a joke. Judy Scrooge, a prominent Canadian. This is Phil editing himself as he goes. No, she's part of the Liberal Party clown show, but she went. And we were given the, and the president's party ran on a, we are afraid of China, we think they're going to attack, or we have to be defended by the Americans. That was what they ran on. And you know, as you know, Phil, that in politics, that often works. You scare the population. Who's going to defend you? A foreign army who might be coming tomorrow and run over the country and all that. And only America can save us. That's the policy. Well, apparently the people of Taiwan, since after all they're Chinese, didn't agree. And look who won. The new mayor of the most populous city of Taiwan is the grandson of Chiang Kai-shek. The grandson of Chiang Kai-shek. His name, by the way, is Wayne, W-A-Y-N-E. So he's somewhat integrated with American imperialism. His grandmother spent more time in San Francisco than she did in Taiwan because she's a fairly cool individual and she was bored in Taiwan. And, you know, she said, I want to be where the action is. So she spent her time in San Francisco. But then, of course, California at that time was considered part of Formosa. All the American congressmen from the West Coast loved a place they called Formosa. Look it up, kids. Look it up. Bill Nolan, look him up. And she sat in his lap, and he and Nixon and everybody waved. And who were they supporting? Chiang Kai-shek. So Chiang Kai-shek's grandson had just been elected mayor of the biggest city. But by the way, it's not a surprise, because the Kuomintang created by Sun Yat-sen created Kuomintang. It was taken over by a general, the Generalissimo, they used to call him, Chiang Kai-shek, an American general, Vinegar Joe. Stilwell called him Knobhead, but then American generals are permitted to say whatever they like about foreigners. So listeners to Taylor Report, you know dirty things. Here's the dirty information you know. That is, the name of the country is Republic of China. It is not Taiwan. It is part of China. The Kuomintang is the Republic of China. The only reason that they're there is that their army was defeated on the mainland, and this was mid-20th century when the People's Republic didn't have a navy to go over and get them. You can apply it to what's going on in Ukraine today. The whole game was to claim that Chiang was about to go back and take over China. He was going to do it. And Richard Nixon, debating Jack Kennedy, was arguing whether or not to unleash Chiang. In other words, you're holding this tiger back. This tiger wants to go back. And because you, the Democrats, lost China. You see, you allowed Mao Zedong and the other people associated. You allowed them to take over. You didn't let Chiang do his stuff. Just like now, you're not letting Zelensky do his stuff. I would say to Zelensky and to grandson of Chiang, they're kind of playing you, kid. They're kind of playing you. You know what I'm saying? You're a sucker. But I guess there's good money in being a sucker. But soon he'll be living in San Francisco where his grandma used to live if he's not careful. Actually, here's the deal. The Kuomintang agrees with the People's Republic. There's one China. They've always thought that. They've never. And so the idea that Taiwan, no, they never believed that. And I know Judy Scrooge will never be able to swallow this exciting information, but it is part of China. It's just an island. And China, by the way, is extraordinarily patient. They have no intention at all. They don't need to do anything other than to continue to develop, arm themselves because they are faced with the most dangerous superpower on the earth, the superpower that used nuclear weapons against Asians. Remember, Mackenzie King in a diary said, it's probably a good thing that they dropped the bomb on Japan and not Germany, because that wouldn't have gone down well amongst white people, bombing an A-bomb on white people. That's a little shocking. An A-bomb on Asians, yeah, no problem. So they had this policy wanting to have a standoff. And China is following a very patient policy. I think they assume that the Americans are not able to back up a bluff about their power, because it could be the end of the line for a white superpower if they were to overplay their game. I would say to Judy, not Judy Scrow, but to Jolie and Trudeau on the Indo-Pacific policy, the Asian countries don't agree with you. The only Asian country that does is Australia, and Japan a little bit, but even Japan is thinking about having a future. So this policy, alienating policy of talking about Indo-Pacific, does not have an army behind it. This is Canada isolating itself to satisfy the American administration. They've already thrown part of our economy under the bus, that is the Huawei, and they want to decouple with Chinese business and all that. It'll be to the detriment of Canada that the net result is going to be and is already damaging. But being a junior partner, you take the pieces that are thrown to you. If they throw you little pieces, you eat those, and always with gratitude. If you see some big pieces and you reach for those, if they're bigger, if Papa Bear, that is Biden in the U.S., say don't, you pull your little paw in and you mind your own business. By the way, America might change course because, you know, they're in the driver's seat. So they could change course, and Canada will have to forget that it believed in Indo-Pacific and do something else, which is the main reason we should all be concerned about this stuff. This is the Taylor Report. I'm going to play you the national anthem of China, just for the fun of it, just because they're the, and we want to congratulate them on being the most rapidly developing country in modern times. I'll play a little bit of it. It won't hurt you. Cover your ears. Is that it? Phil, what are you doing? Oh. Oh, thank you very much. That was Shay's idea. It wasn't my idea. And Shay thought of this. Anyway, here's the deal. We need friendly relations with the People's Republic, just like we need friendly relations with India. We need friendly relations with Cuba. We got them, although the globe is arguing it's now time to cut that one. We need friendly relations all over the world, and these are mutual respect relations. Canada is using a term, our values. I mentioned United States is in Syria. And they're extracting oil. And the only excuse, which is violation of UN Charter all over, up and down, A to Z, top to bottom, invading another country, taking their resources, is okay. That's fine. Everybody's cool with that. Is that how? So those are our values. I would like Jolie to answer that. But they never, when they say our values, they of course have their ear up to what Washington wants. But another question for Justin Trudeau, and Poilievre, he already knows the answer because his answer is whatever America wants is good enough for me in spades. But is the UN Charter our values? Is the Charter of the United Nations, which we signed on to, everybody please read it. It lays out how states are to relate to each other so as to avoid what happened in 1939, 40, 41, World War II. You want to avoid that. So the UN Charter put it in chapter and verse how states are to interact. And you don't get to say our values because you're not the leader of any other country. Jolie or Trudeau, you lead Canada. But if you want to talk to the leader of China, you don't get to say, we don't like your values. We're going to do this and we're going to do that. That's a violation of the Charter. I would call it the so-called Indo-Pacific policy is a classic case of passive aggression. Or the aggression, maybe a more for grammarians, it is aggression in the passive voice. We create a word, in which we say, "Oh, we didn't mean to harm anybody." Well, the other guy doesn't use the word, so why are you trying to make him use it? That's aggression. Saying our values, really, what they're saying is you can't have lunch at our table. We've got a table, and we're all going to sit together, and you can't be at our table because we have our values. And then you say, well, your values include taking territory from Syria, apparently. Or actually, your values, in the case of Libya, involved bombing Libya. Canada dropped bombs on Libya. They couldn't have been prouder. You were asked to leave Afghanistan. You didn't leave. Stayed and killed people. These were in U.S. and Canada approves of U.S. presence in Afghanistan, in Iraq, where, I hate to use numbers, hundreds of thousands of people lost their lives because of Little Bush saying, he was going to finish the job started by his old man of bombing Iraq into whatever. So I would say your values probably ought to be looked at. You seem to be a liar, hypocrite, and you do seem to be happy to cut off your own best interests to please the United States. We played the Chinese anthem. Actually, I did that because I think we should have a policy of mutual respect and friendship. There's no basis to have anything other than friendly relations. Have friendly relations with, if you like, on an appropriate level, with those guys who call themselves the Republic of China, go ahead. But make it friendly. Don't be sending your warships into Taiwan Strait, because somebody might blow them up, And in the case of Canada, we wouldn't have any more warships. So another thing, by the way, if you're a little country, or medium size, they ought to call Canada medium, you're not going to do well if you have a serious war. Something really unhappy is going to happen to your population. And you're supposed to care. The security of the Canadian people is kind of important. That should be your first job. The best way to secure Canadian people is to develop mutually respectful relations with all other states. They're not answerable to you. They don't have to do what you tell them. You're not the boss anymore. That was colonialism, and you're suffering from a hangover from being a colonialist. So you think, like in the case of Justin Trudeau, as the representative of the Bloc Québécois said, he chased Xi down a hallway so he could get a photo op, so that he could stand up back home to Poilievre. He he thinks he's getting pressure from the right. We talked about this last week, the zeitgeist. He was a, so he thought he could use President Xi as a backdrop. this is a Taylor Report. By the way, our values. Here's what our, I think our values ought to be talked about. And Phil, I drug you into this today. At the United Nations, every year now for, I don't know, 20 years? I don't know how long this has been going on. But there is a motion brought. It condemns glorification of Nazism. Am I right?
That's right. The Russians bring the motion, and it always passes. And it passed this year, mind you, with many, many countries abstaining, even though part of their history were being victims of Nazism.
Yeah, no, let me stop you right there. Yes, this motion had been there before, and two countries voted against the motion which condemns glorification of Nazism. Those two countries were the United States and Ukraine. That's what it's been. And even then, there were America's friends would tend to abstain. Now, this year, Canada switched its vote and also voted against a United Nations resolution condemning the glorification of Nazism. And here's two countries that voted along with Russia and most of the world, it voted a majority, Israel and Syria, not the friendliest countries. They do not get along. They have deadly differences of principle, differences with each other. Syria and Israel agreed with the motion condemning the glorification of Nazism. But this year, for the first time ever, Canada voted against that resolution. Against. And that would be Bob Rae, by the way. Good old Bob, the Social Democrat. Bob is, I would call him, shameless. Absolutely. He's a diplomat. And a diplomat, as they say, is someone who lies for his country. But in his case, I mean, this is... So I want to ask Jolene, so those are our values. Our values, right? Go ahead, Phil.
No, I just wanted to say that, again, we should remind everybody that we fought in an alliance against the Nazis, and we died. Canadians died. Americans died. Russians died in huge numbers. Ukrainians died fighting Nazism, right? Yeah. And all these countries in Western Europe were all, there isn't a country in Europe that wasn't victimized in some way by the Nazis, right? Mm-hmm. And now the Americans will not permit them to say that.
Yes, because they seem to have some friends who actually name streets after, build monuments to people against whom we fought. They lost. They were the Nazis and their collaborators. And now we are told we can't talk about that. We're not, this is not, now we are, because there, again, I just, let's just say this again, statues and streets named after people, individuals, Bandera would be the most famous, who responsible for the deaths of thousands of Jews and thousands of Poles. This is, look it up. They built right now. Well, here's the deal. As Phil just mentioned, founding the United Nations was founded on the body of Nazism. That's what it's founded on. That's it. Why was it formed, the United Nations? To crush Nazism. So then you have a little problem develop. And we made a joke of it on the Taylor Report. We say, we're losing World War II. That vote, by the way, is a huge loss against everybody who fought against Nazism. That was a rallying cry. And now we have people who don't want us to even to have that position. They actually are proud of the fact they collaborated. Proud that they collaborated. And they say, oh, we were anti-Russian. No. Don't you? We had an alliance that defeated Nazism, and it took an alliance to do it and to say, oh, well, yeah, but gee, we fought, you know, the Russians. No. When you did, you were fighting us. You're fighting us. And the only thing that's happened is that we now have a disgraceful political climate where people who actually have to be ashamed of that they were fighting Nazism. Because now we're supposed to stand side by side by people who are trying to kill us, try to help Hitler win. You know, in the city of Odessa, they're debating about Catherine the Great. You probably heard about this, Phil. Catherine the Great.
They wanted to take down the statue of the woman who founded the city.
Yeah, the founder of the city. So that's where her statue was, and it's been removed. Her statue is gone, as far as I know. During the war, it was renamed by our friends here, the ones that America is now protecting and supporting. It was renamed Hitler Square. The Romanian army was in Odessa. And when they arrived there, they renamed the square. Hitler Square, they called it. And the guys who were with him, who are now having streets named after him in Kyiv, we can't condemn that, you see. The United States is against condemning these individuals who were part of the Nazi system, an integral part of the Nazi system. And in the case of Chrystia Freeland, of course, her grandfather, who, there's a parallel in their careers. Her grandfather, it's a matter of record, Chrystia Freeland's grandfather, Mr. Chomiak, went to Poland with the Nazis. The Poles didn't really appreciate the Nazis being in Poland. I don't know if you heard about that. The Poles resisted the Nazis. He was there with the Nazis because they were on their way, in his view, to fight Russia. Our ally, for you school children who don't know this, Russia became our ally. So his game was to get the Germans to defeat the Russians, and then he would be one of the beneficiaries. He was actually a Ukrainian traitor because he's in Poland, and he's collaborating with the Germans. That's what he was doing. Now, it's a verboten in Canada to ask the Deputy Prime Minister if that's true. You can't ask her that, because if you do ask her, they will tell you that's Russian disinformation. What it actually tells you is that there's nobody in Canada wants any information unless it's propaganda, because they're afraid to get any other kind. They don't really want to know the answer to the question. The parallel I point out is that Chrystia Freeland is not in Ukraine, she's in Canada, and wishes for the Western alliance to defeat Russia. Do you see a parallel there? It sounds like Grandpa, you know what I mean? But I know I wouldn't expect anybody at the CBC, certainly not the Globe and Mail, Toronto Star. Toronto Star loves her. That's okay. That's what they've been. Who will just clear the air. And people say, well, she's not responsible for her grandfather. She's definitely not. Could she then please answer the question? Because it has nothing to do with her. We're talking about Grandpa. Is the story about him, collaborator, true or not? She won't answer. And Phil, I'm really kind of tired of hearing about her uncle, because her uncle says that he was a collaborator. However, nobody ever asked him, well, what about Chrystia? Do you two know each other? That's your niece. Could you ask her why she never says what you say? You know, the people around them say, well, she knows. Well, what are you? Good. If she knows, please share it with the class, okay? But no, there's some, and I would say to Mr., is his name Himka? Linka? I appreciate that you have identified your father-in-law, Michael Chomiak, as a collaborator, and he's produced all the evidence any prosecutor could possibly want. Please tell us a little more about your family. I don't understand your family at all. I don't get it. So this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. Canada disgraced itself. Our values said we don't vote for a resolution condemning glorification of Nazism. That's our values. I want them to wear that. I think it's a first prize. Please put it on your shirt. Say you're proud of that vote, that you voted not to endorse the condemnation of glorification Nazism. That's our values, as expressed also in your Indo-Pacific policy. Another issue that we should talk about, we want everybody to think about, a poisonous idea has been thrown amongst the Canadian population. Global News, writer named Sam Cooper, published a long article in which he said over and over and he uses, here's the way to get away with this stuff, alleged 11 members of Canadian Parliament, or 11 people, 11 candidates in the 2019 election were financed by China, and that there was an operative who was an MPP. I don't know if they identify the province. He had $250,000, according to Mr. Cooper, that he was the agent of distributing the money. And the recipients, said the article, were conscious of agents of this policy. And this is all, the source for this is allegedly someone in CSIS. And the story is all aimed at the Prime Minister, because this has something to do with Poilievre and Trudeau. Source is was someone in CSIS that they can't name. And this story has been given legs by all the major media. They've actually made references to it. Phil, have you seen those stories?
All over the place, yes, I have. That,
and they make reference. They have taken a wrecking ball to our political order, because these are madcap allegations. 11 individuals got money, and allegedly it's interference, and allegedly the Prime Minister allegedly raised it with President Xi of China. And we talked about it on last week's show. How could you possibly do that if you have no evidence? You haven't named the individuals. You haven't named the political parties. You haven't identified the individual who allegedly was the bag man, the middle man, etc. They even mentioned the Chinese consul in Toronto, all under this wonderful umbrella word, alleged. Okay, I'd like to find one Canadian journalist other than me who says, I don't believe it at all. I think it's all made up, every syllable. Because if you're not going to produce any evidence, you're not going to name names. By the way, I don't even think that this article claimed to have seen the briefs we're talking about. I don't think there's any evidence all we have is somebody talking. I think that if we had a proper government, if we had a proper opposition, they would say, it's time to put up or shut up. You got no business writing that kind of wild material. And other people have no business giving it legs by running around repeating it. if you are not going to say who is who here? Who is the accuser? Does anybody understand simple justice? You can't accuse people out of the darkness, out of the weeds, and then not give them the opportunity to face. Here's, as you know, Phil, the most important one of all. You get to face your accuser according to, let me tell Ms. Jolie, our values. Anonymous accusers are the most dangerous, you know, particularly when the author says, you know, I promise to protect him. I have to say, maybe he doesn't exist.
Maybe so not only are the accusers anonymous, the accused are anonymous. Nobody knows who the accused are because right. Nobody's been named.
Yeah, and we're supposed to all be jumping up and down and saying, she has to answer. He didn't have to answer nothing. You haven't given him. He actually, tell him what you're talking about. But this is, this shows you the bankruptcy of political journalism that people don't see. Once the prime minister said, as he did, I was never briefed, because the article said he was briefed. He said, I wasn't briefed. Now, all you journalists, quotes, journalist italics, why don't you go back to the guy who started this story and say, have you got anything or not? Because he just said he wasn't briefed. Did you have anything or not? And the rest of us, our job is to say, I don't believe you. I don't like the idea of accusing people, you know, where I don't have any source. Why does the media go with this? It's a mug's game, but we're the mugs. I mean, we're being had. And this goes back to the beginning of the show. Don't believe this stuff. You be a free person. Say somebody makes an accusation, say, I heard you. I heard your accusation. I will now investigate. In this case, I notice you don't have anything. All you have is somebody told you, and you don't have anything. So I'm going to ask Shay if we got 2 minutes. He says we got 2 minutes. Well, all right. So this has been the Taylor Report, CIUT. Hey, thank you very much again for all the support for the show. We're going to be hammering this issue. We're very interested in our values. We would like those values to align with our allies from World War II in the UN Charter. And also, we would like to condemn the glorification of Nazism, which Bob Reid changed his mind on and decided he wasn't against the glorification of Nazism. UN vote. While Israel and Syria said they were. Good for Israel and Syria. This is Taylor Report. We got a little music for you, and we'll see you next week.